When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dress? The History of Fashion is a production of Dress Media. With over 8 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dress, the History of Fashion, a podcast that explores the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, Cassidy Zachary
and April Callahan. Dress listeners, today's episode follows hot on the heels of our episode with Nancy McDonnell, who joined us earlier this week to speak about her book, Empresses of 7th Avenue, World War II, New York City, and the Birth of American Fashion. And that explores the lives and careers of the fashion editors, journalists, designers, publicists, photographers, and other women fashion movers and shakers who really gave birth to the American fashion scene on an international scale during the years of World War II. And yet, we have one more very important empress to discuss this week, as well as some very cool updates on the subject from one of our past episodes.
Back in 2018, fashion historian, educator, and author Natalie Nadell joined us to speak about her recently released documentary, Calendar Girl, which detailed the life and career of Ruth Finley, who is one of the founders of the Fashion Calendar, which organized and oversaw the scheduling of all things American fashion for 7 decades. And today, Natalie is back with a brief refresher of Finley's importance as a figure in American fashion history, and also to share how her research and work on the fashion calendar has expanded in the last few years.
And let me promise you this, friends. If you are a researcher, an academic, and or a fashion historian, this episode is particularly for you because there are some stellar practical applications in terms of what we're going to cover today, perhaps for your own work. And, you know, the word database is right there in the episode title today. So that's the kind of rabbit hole we're going down.
Can't wait. Natalie, thank you so much for joining us again for a little fashion calendar redux.
Natalie, welcome back to Dressed.
Hi, April. I'm thrilled to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
And you joined us the first time all the way back in 2018 to talk about your work on Ruth Finley, the fashion calendar, and your documentary, Calendar Girl. But in the intervening last 6 years, can you believe it's been 6 years since then? This project has really expanded greatly. So we're really happy to have you with us here today with some pretty darn exciting updates. First of all, would you tell us and just remind us perhaps, if not all of our listeners have probably listened to that episode, who was Ruth Finley and how did the fashion calendar come to be?
Thank you so much again, April, for having me back and for exposing your listeners to this journey, both mine and this project's. So Ruth Finley was born in Haverhill, Massachusetts, and she lived in New York for the majority of her life. She was born in 1920, and she was the longest publisher of Fashion Calendar, which was the centralized clearinghouse schedule subscription service that helped schedule the American fashion and creative industries between 1941 and 2014. So she played a pivotal role in not only helping create this very standardized system for scheduling and communicating the information about fashion events, such as fashion shows, retail events, department store activations or retail events, as well as social events and often popular culture related events like film or media. And so the Fashion Calendar, which was the publication that Ruth helped found and led for over 7 decades, really was the centralized service and became the unique calendar of the American fashion industries.
Yeah. And I just think it's so interesting that the birth of the fashion calendar really coincides with the work of many women like Eleanor Lambert, who were fostering the growth of the American fashion industry, and also the birth of American fashion having its own design lexicon. And another thing that you and I have spoken about, but Ruth really also acted as an intermediary or an arbiter a lot of the time within the fashion industry for people's disputes or squibbles or quabbles, but she was a super well-respected figure within the industry.
Absolutely. What became of her role as the arbiter of the fashion calendar is she really became the central hub for all of this information about the times, event spaces, locations, and the general goings on. And it wasn't only covering the market weeks. It was a year-long serialized publication. And so it really covered many different adjacent industries, not only fashion, but textiles and millinery, accessories, and all kinds of adjacent fields. Ruth, as you were saying, was very much part of this group. Ruth helped and worked with Eleanor Lambert. Eleanor Lambert was a major subscriber of Fashion Calendar and used Fashion Calendar to not only list her press week, which she started in 1943, but used it for all of her events. It was very strategically used. And the fashion calendar, what I've learned in my research, we knew this when we made the documentary, but what I've learned in my research even more since then has been that the start of the fashion calendar very much is a reaction to the beginnings of the, as you say, American designed collections, as we know, very much precipitated by World War II. And the disconnection of fashion information and goods and design generally from Paris. And so those first collections in 1940, not only were they designed by designers in the United States, primarily in New York, but they also were the first time that the industry had to scramble to all do fashion shows and essentially create a market week that was reflective of American design. And what I found is that Fashion Week, in quotation marks, was pretty chaotic, obviously, because it was the first time many companies were doing it and all this stuff. What I found and what I talk about in my forthcoming book is I found an open letter that was published in Women's Wear Daily in October of 1940 that was addressed to the retailers and department store executives in New York City. It was signed by 10 fashion journalists and executives from the most important newspapers in the country and essentially listed around 8 demands of, okay, now we're doing this. We're the journalists. We are the ones who disseminate all of this to the public. We need you to have a standardized schedule. We need you to have fashion shows between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., essentially conforming in some ways to the journalistic time system that was operating in a very different way than the fashion time system. And so the fashion calendar amazingly turns up within about 7 months after that. And Alice Hughes, who is one of the signatories of that open letter, was also one of the founders of Fashion Calendar. Clearly, there was an understanding from within the industry already by these women who were part of the industry and literally had to work and navigate it, that there needed to be some centralized cohesion, and the fashion calendar was designed to fulfill that.
Because fashion journalists can't be in two places or three places or four places at the same time. So they were basically like, hey, guys, if you want us to do our best covering this moment, this monumental moment in American fashion, work with us. Let's schedule this. Let's get it together. Let's streamline things. Because again, if there wasn't a governing body, if there wasn't a governing schedule, it was pure mayhem.
Mayhem. And also we have to remember that for a journalist to file a story in the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s was different than covering something on your laptop and sending an email. And so there are all these also technological and time system processes, like the journalistic time system of filing a story and then it being published in the paper is very different than how fashion houses operate. And there needed to be some sort of symbiosis. And it's amazing how the fashion calendar also gives you this purview of a month out as well. That, I too, was one of the key elements of the publication, as well as Ruth and the team at Fashion Calendar really became this very important hub. They also helped their subscribers strategically plan their events, which I think so very helpful. It was a tool as well as a publication that provided information.
Your documentary Calendar Girl goes into lots more detail about this in lots of different ways. But if people haven't seen it, where can they stream that now?
Calendar Girl was released in 2020 in the film festival circuit and then widely in 2022. And people who are interested can watch it on Amazon, on iTunes. It's available on DVD. And if you have a library subscription, it's available on Canopy. And I'm pretty sure it's also available on Tubi as well.
Okay, cool. There you have it. If Natalie making this really important documentary wasn't enough, there is now so much more to this project. A massive congratulations on all this Herculean work that you have put into, as our audience is about to learn. So I think you're project is a really interesting and excellent example how historians can take their vein of research and grow it off into all of these different directions. Because now there's the documentary, now there is a book, and also an online database that's accessible to the public for free. And yet each of these aspects of the project are radically different. They all approach the same topic from different angles, and you get different end results in a sort of fashion. Would you tell us about your approach to each of these, the documentary, the book, and the database? And I do want to go into more detail about the book and the database here shortly, but just very broadly speaking, how do all these outputs fit together to form the project as it stands currently?
The approach that I took with the documentary was one. The documentary, first of all, is really for the public. It is meant to be informational and historically accurate and informative, as well as a window into this very interesting story about Ruth, her personal life, her experience. Ruth, we were lucky enough to be able to follow Ruth and really get to know her and be able to try to capture her on film. And my work as the producer and writer and as a historian was really to do the research on all of the contextual sort of information and developing the questions and forming the story and introducing who this character was and why she was so important to Fashion Week and why this thing that is a fashion calendar that seems so, you know, innocuous is actually extremely complex and extremely important for a multi-billion dollar industry. And that it was amazingly run by one woman for 7 decades.
Yeah.
You know, just the story is amazing. That was the approach that we took for the film. Now, my work as a historian led me to a more scholarly approach when thinking about and approaching Ruth's archive. I was very lucky to have an incredible relationship with Ruth. And she was truly my mentor and taught me so much in so many ways, not only about fashion, but about life and being an adult. And being,
and you guys were always running off to the theater together, I remember.
And also imparted her love of the theater. She was an incredible human. So when Ruth retired, essentially, even though she probably wouldn't use that word, the Council of Fashion Designers of America acquired the fashion calendar and control over the New York Fashion Week schedule in 2014.
And which they maintain to this very day.
Yes. And then, but what she did was she had very much the conviction that her archive was extremely important. And so she specifically decided to make sure her collection, which included the entire run of Fashion Calendar, as well as Fashion International, which was a newsletter trend forecasting, like newsletter that you could get along with your Fashion Calendar subscription, as well as the very short run of Home Furnishings Calendar, which was a sort of licensed offshoot of Fashion Calendar that focused on the home furnishings industry between 1947 and 1951-2. And so she made sure to give that as a donation to Special Collections and College Archives at the Gladys Marcus Library at FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology. In my work as an adjunct assistant professor in the history of art department at FIT. I'm a fashion and textile historian. I was very lucky to have access to Roots Archive even before many other people did. And so I really went through it with a fine tooth comb. And April knows, she was sitting across from me for a lot of that time.
So many hours.
So many hours going through pink paper. And all I kept thinking as I was going through this massive pink paper, we're talking about like 23 linear feet. It's like almost 39,000 pages of material. And all I kept on thinking was, I can't wait until I get a search bar. That would be incredible. And I really felt like the fashion calendar would be a fantastic resource and something that should be digitized, something that should be made into a database, and something that could be really interesting because it has such a granular level of information over a very specific period of time. And it's almost minute to minute. So it's incredible. Even if you find a listing that's short, it often will give you a window into something else. But then also, how could we use all of this data in more interesting ways? So I was lucky that I was able to get the support from my faculty and other people at FIT. And I collaborated with Special Collections and College Archives. And we decided to start seeking funding and seeing if we can get a project going that was focused on a digital humanities approach. Like, how can we make this accessible? How can we uncover hidden narratives and hidden stories? How can we make this data applicable to more lines of questioning and more experimental ways of thinking about how do we study fashion, the industry, culture, et cetera? And so we were very lucky that the Council of Library and Information Resources really saw the value of this project. And we were awarded the Digitizing Hidden Collections grant in 2020, which is offered by CLEAR. And the project funding is made possible by the Mellon Foundation. And so we were awarded the funding and we started implementing the project, which included the digitization. So taking all of the material, scanning it and making it available.
39,000 pages.
Yes. And we were lucky to have a really great team to work with at Backstage Library Works. The second prong of this project was this idea of implementing digital humanities.
Giving everyone a search bar.
Giving everyone a search bar and also implementing these methodologies that did more with the data. Digital humanities is a field that really thinks about how data and digital processes can enhance humanities research by using data in different fields to either do quantitative research or create more sort of like complex patterning, et cetera. There's many ways it's applicable. Some people use it to learn dead languages, all kinds of things. But in our case, it was more about working with the data. And so we ended up being confronted by a major challenge, which was the extraction, all of the data from the material. And so we ended up having to explore novel and new ways of managing this issue. And as we all know, artificial intelligence and machine learning is something that is very much in the discourse at the moment. And so we were starting to seek solutions in that realm. And we were able to find a company called Explore AI that's based in Quebec, Canada, that was able to help us with our issue, which was essentially because Fashion Calendar was formatted in an analog way using a typewriter for a lot of its history. The way a traditional OCR, which is optical character recognition software, read the data was in columns and not in the way that Fashion Calendar was actually formatted. So it generated really jumbled data. And so Explore AI was able to create an algorithm that was able to extract and parse all of the data and generated over 200,000 individual event listings, which are now navigable in ways that were previously impossible. So users can refine by location, by year, by designer, by different categories. And because we wanted to integrate a lot of students into the project, in not only the development, but the research behind it. We wanted to illuminate the identity elements within the fashion calendar. So for instance, you and I both know that the history of American fashion, so many of the people, the communities who have contributed to the history, to not only the labor of fashion, but design, culture, have been very much overly represented by traditionally underrepresented groups, right? Many of the people who made up the workers in fashion are from different waves of immigrant communities, starting from Jewish communities in the early 20th century to Latin American communities and Puerto Rican communities, as well as Chinese Americans and many other communities along the way. And as a result, I felt like it was important to give users the ability to trace information based off of different identity categories that would be relevant to research that's very current and happening today that really puts identity and culture at the forefront and centers that. And so if you want to trace the participation of women, the participation of the LGBTQ community, and many different groups that are within the historical record, often hidden, the fashion calendar database in many ways allows researchers to uncover those stories. Now, how we did that is that we had our student researchers perform primary source research on all of the names and identity and entities who listed in fashion calendar. And by doing this primary and secondary source research, they were able to tag categories based off of gender, nationality, race, status, as well as categories such as garment categories, different types of positions within the fashion industry, for instance, PR, et cetera. So there are all these different categories that are modular, essentially, on the database. And so you can mix and match these terms and generate listings that will conform to that. Additionally, there are really great data visualizations that we were able to add to the database. So you can, there's an ngram function. Ngram allows you to trace when a word starts appearing over time or a person's name, as well as there are graph functions where you could look at the amount of shows listed by certain people or certain groups over time. And there's a mapping function.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It's such a fantastic feature. And I have to say, Joseph Anderson, who is the digital lead and developer of this project, he was really very adamant about the map function from the beginning. And especially for fashion calendar, it's so great because every location is listed. And so you're really able to map out, you can map out someone's career, or you can map out a specific fashion week, or you could just find all the locations that certain things were shown. It's a very interesting functional tool that also is interlinked with the categories and other ways of searching it. So I encourage all of your users to head to the database link that I know is somewhere attached to this thing.
It's in the show notes, but if you want to say it, go ahead and say it out loud. Go ahead.
Fashioncalendar.fitnyc.edu.
Dress listeners, we know from experience that getting started investing can feel confusing. Especially with so many options out there, many people tend to put it off. But it does not need to be intimidating.
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. And you don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you.
Acorns offers a learning platform for anyone wanting to learn more about investing strategies and also offers ESG portfolios, which invest your money in companies rated for their impact on environment, social, and governance issues, something that you know we love on Dressed.
So what are you waiting for? Head to acorns.com/dressed or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing in your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/trust. Cass, Did you know that learning a new language isn't only helpful for international travel? Acquiring new language skills also has cognitive benefits and can improve brain function. Studies have shown that learning a new language can improve memory, problem-solving skills, and even delay the onset of dementia.
There are so many reasons to learn a new language, Dress listeners, and Rosetta Stone has been the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Available to use on a desktop or an app, Rosetta Stone is flexible for when you want to learn fast by immersion.
With features like True Accent that gives you feedback on your pronunciation, to the fact that you get lifetime access to all of Rosetta Stone's 25 languages, this incredible offer solves all your language learning needs for life.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Dress listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Artifact Uprising wants to help you preserve your meaningful moments this holiday season. Whether you want to say I love you with the perfect gift, display favorite memories in your home, or connect with loved ones throughout the year, they have a product you can personalize.
Yes, so many wonderful products, and that even includes baby board books, which is something that I recently personalized for my 2-year-old son, Leo, who loves to read. And I titled the book, A Boy Named Leo. And the best part is that it all comes illustrated with some of my favorite pictures of him by himself and with family and friends. It really is such a sweet, unique, and special commemoration of our life together thus far, and something we will all cherish forever.
Artifact Uprising makes it easy to tell your story. Through the end of the year, Dress listeners can give Artifact Uprising a try and get 20% off for new customers or 15% off if you have purchased before. Just visit artifactuprising.com and use the code DRESSED through December 31st. And what's so interesting is the database is jam-packed with so many different kinds of information, which means it's not just fashion historians that should or can be interested in this. There's so many different ways to approach it. So what do you think, or who do you think some of your other potential audiences might be?
That's a great question. First of all, everybody should know it's completely open source. Anybody can use it from anywhere in the world. Also, all of the data is open source, as well as the code generated to create the database. That's part of the position of making it open access. So the fashion calendar is fascinating because so many different fields and groups use it. I think people interested in political history, because there's so many, especially during the wartime, but also throughout, municipal events, political events, the use of fashion events for non-fashion reasons, like
diplomacy.
There are so many different ways fashion events are used for fundraising, for collaborations with popular culture. So I think anyone interested in popular culture, in economics, in politics, it's valuable to look at the fashion calendar, because the names of people also show up attending events or hosting events that are not necessarily part of fashion, in the sense of there are many people who have collaborated over the years and show up in fashion calendar. One of the examples I use on the database, if you go into the how-to button, I use an example of Eartha Kitt. We all know the fabulous Eartha Kitt. I typed her name into the fashion calendar, and she didn't herself ever host a fashion show, but she was the singer or like the special guest at a couple of fashion shows that were hosted at Bergdorf Goodman, or I'm not sure which department store. It might have been another department store. But the idea is so many people show up in fashion calendar that are unexpected. I think anyone interested in textiles, because so much of the history of the textile industry is in the fashion calendar, trade shows. Anyone interested in hotels or the history of hospitality, you could really trace the movement of groups through different hotels and how hotels and buildings in New York City have changed. That's also something interesting our student interns had to deal with. Some buildings don't exist anymore and you have to go find what was there. And it's very interesting to think about how it represents the New York cityscapes in a very interesting way. And I think anyone interested in digital humanities, because the amount of data and the possibilities are incredible. In women's history, in the history of AIDS, there's a small part of my book that talks about how the fashion calendar is very useful in seeing how the fashion industry and the community around it really galvanized for the community during the AIDS epidemic and came together and fundraised for the cause and many other times during American history. It's very interesting looking back during the wartime and seeing announcements by the American government and the Navy and the Army and all kinds of federally mandated rules about cotton and very important commodities that were being rationed during the war. And so it's an incredible window into history. And I encourage people who are researchers to look at it, but anyone really who is interested, what's great about it is that it's so based in 20th century popular culture and in things that so many people know.
Right.
And so you could really type in anything and find something interesting, I think.
Do you have any pro tips on the back end in terms of using it? You have a whole how-to page.
Yes. It depends how you're looking at the fashion calendar, but I think if you're interested in what was happening either during fashion weeks or what was happening during a specific time, I think it's very useful to look at listings in an entire issue and look at what was happening in the general vicinity of the time period you were looking at. And so that's really valuable. And what's great about the database is that it allows you to navigate the data, but then also navigate the actual calendars as if they're in front of you and on a page viewer and you could flip the page. And so I think users should definitely get the experience of flipping the page and what it's like going through the calendars.
Same with fashion magazines. When the students come in, I'm like, yes, Vogue and Harper's Bazaar and Women's Wear Daily are entirely digitized. Now they have their own databases and we can keyword search Christian Dior. We can keyword search Claire McArdle. But it's not the same as coming in and looking at the magazines because you're getting all of that context. You're not just getting one hit. It's all the contextual information that makes you understand that moment and their work.
Absolutely. And also what it was like in that time to actually get that actual view of information, like that person got at that on that day from that issue. But then I also think on the data side, I think here's a really great tip. It's important to recognize that it's an incredible amount of information and data and that we're still also working at it and cleaning it up. And so performing searches in multiple different ways, using different terminology is going to be important. Anything that's searched within quotation marks, we'll do a full text search in the entire run. Put multiple sort of categories and names or attributes together to generate different types of data. It's really such a large amount that there's so many ways to approach it. And ultimately, to get back to your question, what was my approach for the database, is really just making it widely available. And I can't wait to learn about all of the amazing ways people are using it.
Yes.
How I used it for my book that's coming out this month, actually, called In American Fashion, Ruth Finley's Fashion Calendar. My approach for the book was more of an analytical look at the fashion calendar as a publication, its history, as well as the history of the women who founded it, and also how the fashion calendar operated as a very important structural tool that set the timeline of the American fashion in the fashion industrial complex, essentially, and how calendars generally, but applied to fashion calendar, reflect the multitudes of the communities that use them. And so what's interesting about fashion calendar is that it reflects the fashion time system, which, as many people know, but for those who don't, is run on a socially constructed artificial calendar, right? It runs 6 months in advance to account for time to design a collection, put it into production, show it to people.
And seasonal changes.
Seasonal changes, and then put it into production to make sure that people have, and this is, of course, in the 20th century, once it's all industrialized and really set in the sportswear, ready-to-wear setting. Even before that, this calendar had been set of 6 months in advance. And since the fashion time system is socially constructed, it also accounts for so many other calendar systems of so many of the groups that worked in fashion. And so I looked at how the fashion calendar incorporated elements of the Jewish calendar, how the fashion calendar and the time system in the United States was also really critical, because as New York set its fashion week and market dates, and as the 20th century ensued and globalization continued to happen, the fashion calendar, the calendar that set the market week, consistently fluctuated over time, and how the fashion calendar was really used as this instrument to position Ruth, but then also the CFDA, as really the premier governing body of American fashion because of its tie to the calendar and New York Fashion Week, and this legacy of the past 70 years of creating this really important system and central hub of information.
Yeah.
And the last chapter of the book, rather, is an analysis and sort of presentation and development of the database. So the final chapter really focuses on that. And so that was my approach for the book.
When I think of the book, I think it almost as this companion manual of sorts to the database. There's some big theory in here, right? You talk about time and the fashion system in terms of time quite a bit, but and it's not so much a narrative as it is contextualizing the importance of the database and how people can come to it and use it. And that explanation is really necessary because the database itself is so, the data is amorphous in a lot of different ways. It can take different shapes. So I think that's why the book is really critical to explain it, if that makes any sense.
That's what I hope to do in the book. That's really what I was hoping to do. I hope I succeed. But I really tried to grapple with some of these ideas, because for me, looking at the fashion calendar with this incredible multitude of information, how do you approach it?
Yeah,
right? It's really challenging. It's a huge amount of information. And so the approach I took was really looking at this broader idea of how calendars function within culture, and then also particularly within industrial and commercial time systems that are obviously very much also pegged to time. It's something that we probably all very much take for granted, but it's these things that keep us all going.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. I was going to say, your listener should know that this conversation started with April showing me her calendar.
Very true. I did. I was like, look. And no, she's not done yet, friends. There's an entire phase 2 in the works for the database. So Natalie, would you like to tease what is coming or potentially coming next?
We are hoping in phase 2 of the project to integrate some visual media and other media related to the fashion shows,
which
particularly
is so exciting.
New York Fashion Week, yes, since 1993, but ideally in a future world, the entirety of it, if it's even possible.
Like potentially integrating the actual runway shows that you could click on from their listing in the calendar.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
If we are able to do that, is hopefully the goal. As well as add other functions and research functions, as well as adding much more content and student-led research, and really hoping to use the database to galvanize people to continue developing research and ideas about American fashion and the history of the American garment industry and American culture tied to that way. I think what's interesting is that this September, or in the recent past few months, there are numerous books that have just been released that all talk about American fashion as a counterpoint to Paris fashion. And I think that this story and the database itself is an amazing confirmation of that.
Absolutely. It is the primary source. Like, it's not a primary source. It's the primary source.
Exactly. And so I think it's ripe for the picking. I hope that everyone who uses it, finds something that's interesting to them, and that if it's not, it leads them to something else. But I hope that it the phase two leads to it becoming even more of a hub for the history of American fashion, something that's open source, that encourages users to look at primary sources and to go back to the source material. That's, I think, really important in this age of so much information being available online and so many people communicating all kinds of information they find online. I think giving users and people the tools to go and find, as you say, the source matter and the information, to me, that's just where I hope this continues to go.
Natalie, thank you so much for joining us today. We really only scratched the surface of this incredible multivalent project, which still continues to evolve. But if people would like to reach out to you with questions, or anybody out there who would like to give her funding for phase two, just throwing it out there, where can they find you?
People could find me at Natalie_Newdell@fitnyc.edu. Also, there is a information link on the Fashion Calendar Database website. There's a contact email. You're welcome to email me there. I have access to that information. So the Fashion Calendar Database also has an Instagram page.
It has a wonderful Instagram page.
Thank you. That is an honor coming from you. So we have an Instagram page that's FCRD_FIT. And you're welcome to contact me there as well. And yes, please be in touch, not only with questions, but if you have information, if you have a contribution, we'd love to talk to you. And even if you just want to share how you used it, or if it gave you some great information, I'd love to hear it. So please be in touch.
Natalie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, April. And thank you to the Dress team for always teaching us so much about the history of fashion.
Natalie, many thanks for sharing this incredible project. What a gift to us all who work on or around the subject of American fashion. And Dress listeners, we have, of course, put a link to the Fashion Calendar Database in our show notes, as well as a link to the project's Instagram, which again is @FCRD_FIT. Natalie's book is also available, of course, on our Dress bookshelf at bookshop.org/shop/dress, also linked in our show notes. And it is there that you can find her book, along with more than 150 of our other favorite and featured fashion history titles.
I think that does it for us this week, Dress listeners. May you ponder the many professions behind the scenes that help you get dressed each and every day. Remember, we love hearing from you. So if you'd like to write to us, you can do so at hello@dressedhistory.com or DM us on our Instagram, which is @dressed_podcast. And that is where you will find posts and reels to accompany each of our week's episodes. And the content for this specific episode can be found at #dressed513.
You can also head to dressedhistory.com, where you can check out our latest offerings from the Dress universe, which includes classes, trips, and tours like our soon-to-be Dressed Fashion History Tour of Paris, where we are headed next week, April.
Yes, I actually leave this coming Sunday, so I'm going to be there a little bit early. Yeah, so that trip is actually completely sold out and has been for months, but we will be doing another one in 2025, almost certainly. And also, friends, my tours in New York City of the Metropolitan Museum of Art are going to be on hold for all of October and most of November. But in the meantime, if you find yourself in Paris in October or November, I'm going to be running some little day tours there. So you can check out dressedhistory.com for further details about that. I haven't posted those quite yet, but they should be coming very, very soon.
Love Dress but want to skip the ads? Consider subscribing to our ad-free version of the show for just $3 a month and enjoy our 8 new episodes a month ad-free. That does it for us today, Dress listeners. Thank you as always for tuning in, and more Dress coming your way very soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.